Superhuman eyes. Accelerated evolution.
In a rapidly evolving world, many of us are looking to ancient wisdom and nature for answers. Answers to heal, to enhance, and to deeply connect with our inner selves. Today's guest is a student and a steward of that journey. J.W. Ross, founder and mastermind behind Botanic Tonics, has been trailblazing a path where ancient botanical wisdom meets modern science. A true enthusiast of the power of plants, J.W. has not only harnessed the profound effects of traditional remedies like kava and kratom, but has alchemized them to meet today's needs. J.W. has always been at the forefront of innovation, being the brain behind the plant-based tonic known as Feel Free. Originally carving a path as a successful oil magnate in Texas, his triumphs in the corporate world were shadowed by struggles with alcohol addiction. The turning point came after a challenging stint in rehab, leading him to renounce alcohol entirely and dramatically shift his career trajectory. In his quest for healing and self-discovery following his recovery, J.W. journeyed through the South Pacific and Southeast Asia. It was here that he encountered ancient botanical medicines, which have long been embraced both socially, in ritual, and for wellness. Inspired by these natural remedies, J.W. became deeply committed to developing an herbal alternative that could offer the euphoria of alcohol without its negative repercussions. Through extensive experimentation and refinement, he crafted a blend which has since evolved into the wildly successful Feel Free tonic recipe. Through Botanic Tonics, J.W. offers the world a taste of nature's magic, bottled and delivered with passion. His story is more than about botanicals. It's about innovation, commitment to the environment, and ethical entrepreneurship. Please join our conversation about the fascinating world of plant-based wellness as we explore the mysteries, the science, and the future of nature's remedies with J.W. Ross. Ariana Summer, and I have passionately dedicated the last 12 years of my life to creating the ultimate human experience mentally, physically, and spiritually based on the most powerful ancient teachings and cutting-edge modern discoveries and technologies. The Superhumanized Podcast is a show committed to sharing what I have learned from the world's leading experts in order to help you achieve your full potential and create your best life ever. J.W., welcome to the Superhumanized Podcast. It's a true pleasure to connect with you today.
Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. I have heard a lot about you and your company in these last year and a half. And I myself am also very interested in the medicinal effects of plants. And so I've been really excited to talk to you today and to pick your brain. I would like to start this conversation with asking you about the inspiration behind you starting Botanic Tonics. What got you there? If you'd share a little bit of your backstory with us, because as far as I know, your life prior to Botanic Tonics was, if I may say so, the polar opposite of what it is today.
It was specifically what caused me to produce this was not, it wasn't something for commercial use. It was for myself. And I was really trying to address an issue that I've had my entire life, and that's social anxiety. For the first 40 years of my life, I treated my social anxiety with alcohol and other drugs, mainly alcohol. And in the very beginning, that worked quite well. Towards the end, which was about 13 years ago or so, it stopped working well. And I was fortunate to be very successful, way more so than I ever dreamed that I would be. But as that success increased and the things increased, so did my consumption of alcohol. Not so much the other drugs, that kind of waned off, but alcohol definitely followed the same path. And it got to the point where it was really starting to cause significant issues in my life and the life of people around me. And yeah, I knew that if I kept on the projection that I was on, that I would kill myself and or somebody else, but just didn't feel comfortable without it. Fortunately, I had some good friends around me, did an intervention, and I went off to treatment, 90-day inpatient treatment. And I guess I'm one of the minority that it worked the first time, because as I said before, I've not had a drink since.
This is how many years ago, JW?
Going on 13 years.
Wonderful. Congratulations. Yeah. And what really is so interesting to me when we talk about alcohol, the fallout is new. Whether someone actually can't forego drinking it or becomes addicted to it, or whether it's just most of us who've been drinking alcohol at least once in a while also know how it feels to be drunk, how it feels to behave in ways that we're sober would not. So what's so interesting is that alcohol, of course, is so condoned societally, even though we know about the fallout psychologically and physically. And then, of course, all the medical complications and even deaths that result from overconsumption or even incidentals such as accidents caused by drunk driving and such. So that to me is very interesting, especially when we compare alcohol to some of the plant medicines we're going to
do today. Right. It's interesting in the process of, I came out of treatment. My life was infinitely better than what it was before. The base issue that I had not gone away just because I quit drinking. In fact, it was more amplified because I wasn't self-medicating. And for the first 2 or 3 years or so, I pretty much isolated myself, went off on a sabbatical and just was really trying to figure out what to do the next chapter of my life. And I just did not feel comfortable around people, most people, and just didn't feel comfortable with my own skin, even by myself. And I knew that if I didn't find something to replace that alcohol with, that I was going to go back to doing, eventually I would go back to doing what I was doing before. So I went on this quest of trying to find something that would do what alcohol did for me early on. And I tried everything I could get my hands on, legal in the market. None of that really did anything to speak of, or didn't really do what I wanted it to do. And then I tried everything illegal. Almost all of that did too much, or it wasn't something that you could take on a regular basis. It was just too hard on your system. What I was looking for was something that would make me feel good, a social lubricant, but not be inebriating, something that I could use on a regular basis, use during the day, and not feel like I couldn't drive a car or go to work. And the holy grail is to find something that even enhances that. And I couldn't find it. I'm a research fanatic. I'm an engineer by background, and I just started really digging into social lubricants and what different societies around the world have used for the last several thousand years. And I found a handful of different things that I didn't know that much about before. And fortunately, during this time, I was living in Southeast Asia, and I got into Eastern medicine there and found some of it through that. And then I'd had some experiences with some of the plant medicines way earlier in life. So I started gathering up different plants, different strains, and then really started doing, at first I just started trying them separately and then still didn't find what I was wanting. And then I started doing combinations.
And so we're talking about right now, when we're talking about specific plants, Southeast Asia, I'm assuming you're talking about kratom, the kratom leaf.
That's correct. Yes. And kava from Pacific Islands. Kana from South Africa, from Central and South America. I pretty much gathered everything up that anyone would say that potentially could help what I was trying to do. And It was about a 2-year process of trying different strains of each plant and different combinations and different percentages. And I did this just myself informally. I set up a lab in the kitchen of my house and just used myself as a guinea pig. And I kept doing it until I found feel that I was looking for. And in the process of doing this, I had friends and family that kind of got interested in it, and I started trying some of it with them. And when I finally found the combination that we're using for Feel Free, I had a lot of them say, you need to sell this stuff. So that's how I got into consumer packaged goods.
Yes. And the success of your company speaks for itself. Your original product, the tonics of Feel Free, are a mixture of kratom and kava. And what's so interesting about this to me is that, as I just mentioned, kratom is a leaf. It comes from Southeast Asia. And kava, of course, is a root that comes from the Polynesian islands, from that part of the world. And both of these plants or plant parts have been used respectively for thousands of years within these cultures, these geographies. And as far as I know, you are the first person who's known for combining these two. Now,
I don't know. I did a lot of research on that too, because, you know, when you're doing something like this, you don't know whether, you know, what it's going to do to you, because no. And so I did a lot of research, try to find anything I could find through Reddit threads or research papers or whatever. I couldn't find anybody prior to me that had combined some of these things, specifically not the kava and the kratom before. Well, I was at a point where I didn't feel like I had much to lose, because I knew, like I said before, I would go back to alcohol, and I knew where that would end. So I was like, it's going to happen. So why not give it a try? And I stumbled off into it.
And I would like to give the audience a little bit more background on both of these plants. So I already have done type of a lead in. Can you discuss the history and also the cultural significance of both?
You said, yeah, they've both been used for thousands of years in their respective areas. Kava, which is our main ingredient, the formulation is 10-1 kava over kratom. Kava is basically alcohol for the Polynesian islands, or has been. There's alcohol is infiltrated now, more so in certain areas than others, and that's an interesting story in itself. If you go there, you'll have kava bars, just like you'd have alcohol bars here, and entire villages, societies, cities, whatever, consume kava just like we would consume alcohol here. And have been for generations and generations. It's minimally processed. They take the root, they dry it, they grind it up, and they make like a tea out of it and consume it. Generally in the evenings and weekends, again, very similar to alcohol. And it's a social lubricant. It works wonderfully. It's interesting because it's a social lubricant, but it does it in a completely different way than alcohol works. And alcohol actually is a great social lubricant too, but it does it very differently. The kava lactones in the kava are, they, for lack of a better term, they call it a heart opener. Really, I think what it does is it quietens you down. It somewhat strips your ego. And in doing that, you then are more attuned to what's going on around you, the people around you. So as opposed to being full of yourself and trying to be the life of the room, you're more reserved, but you're also at the same time, you're more interested in what everybody, truly interested in what everybody else is saying. And you have much more in-depth, wonderful conversations with everyone around you, and you feel good. You just generally feel a sense of well-being. So if you go into kava bars, gatherings for people drinking kava, the noise level is a lot lower. People are having wonderful conversations, laughing, there traditionally you're singing and dancing, very different than what you would see in an alcohol setting. And alcohol, the way it does it is the liquid courage, which takes people that are socially awkward or inward and amplifies them. It makes you feel more aggressive or more confident.
Yes, which
is fine, but you put a group of people together that are doing that and they start trying to overpower each other, and it gets louder, it gets louder, it gets louder. And usually if there's younger people involved, fights will break out and various other things. And it's a completely different experience.
Yes. And where you say alcohol is liquid courage, kava is, if I may say so, maybe more compared to liquid love. You just spoke to that it's a heart opener in a sense. I've experienced that myself. I think the calmness that comes over you and just a feeling of love for yourself and also for others, it's not something that's imposed. To me, it rather feels like this plant or this root helps open up channels that are otherwise not open, be it by the...
I think maybe those channels are open. I think it's just that our self overpowers them.
Yes.
Our ego, whatever you want, is over amplifies over the top of them.
Yes. And
what you said is very, because one of my favorite, and I forget now who made this quote, but it was basically said, it's impossible to hate on kava.
Yeah.
And I've thought about that a lot. And I actually believe that's true, because I don't know of a single situation. And I've been in thousands of kava ceremonies. I've been with lots of groups. And I don't think I've ever seen anybody consuming kava that was in a state of hating.
Yeah. And the interesting thing, of course, to note with alcohol, and nothing against alcohol, I've been known to enjoy a nice glass or two of red wine, or when it's wintertime, I do like my single malt. I like scotch, I like whiskey in moderation. However, alcohol is a depressant, and it will have certain effects on your psyche and also on your body in the moment, and then, of course, also on the day after. Even if I just drink one glass of red wine, or two, which is a lot for me.
Yeah. Even in smaller quantities, you think about it, alcohol is an antiseptic. You're putting an antiseptic into your body, and why would you not feel the effects of that the next day? Because it's killing things. That's what it's designed to do. That's probably one of the most interesting things that I found when I did the research, was that of these handful of things, including alcohol that's been used in different places around the world, alcohol is an outlier. All the rest of them were used pretty much in their native form. Alcohol is highly processed. Really, can make a case that alcohol is a processed food. And that's maybe the issue, is that it is too processed. And when you do that, then you open the door to overconsumption.
That's a very interesting thought, JW. And so to revert back to kava, so we've talked about, you mentioned it's been used socially and also ceremonially in Polynesia and has a lot of different wonderful effects. And how about prato? Now, that originates in Southeast Asia. I know there are different names or classifications, red vein, white vein, green vein, which as far as I know, it refers also to the amount of alkaloids and also how dry or moist the leaves are.
Yeah, it's my personal opinion is the red, green, and all that was developed as a marketing play. We're actually growing some kratom in South Florida, and you can go to a tree and the leaf will have all color veins in it. I can take any kratom leaf, and the way you process it will turn it. So if you put it out, if you dry it without sun, it's going to be green. If you dry it out in the sun, it's going to turn red. Now, there could be some changes going on in the alkaloid ratios because of the sunlight and all of that could cause a little bit of difference. I can't really tell much difference between them. I think the beauty of that having was like you do you do the red this time of day and you do the green this time of day. So it was a way of getting people to go to buy more, consume more. But traditionally, used all throughout Southeast Asia, if you go into rural Southeast Asia, which I lived there for almost 3 years, and you go down a road, you'll see these little shacks, and the shacks have, they're kind of like their version of Starbucks. They have little bags with a straw sticking in them, and it's kratom tea. And they, again, they don't really highly process it. They take the leaves, they grind them up, and they make a tea out of it. Much different than what's happened here in the U.S. market, which we'll get into.
Yes.
And it's used for productivity enhancement and endurance, and also just a general feeling of feeling good. The workers there work long days in the fields, 6-7 days a week, and they use this to not only endure that, but to actually have a good time doing it. I've been out with them in the fields. Again, there's singing, there's laughter, you know, not what you would think of toiling in that kind of heat and humidity 12, 14 hours a day.
Yes, I've noticed a really interesting effect on myself as well. I mentioned this before we actually hit record. So I like to work out 5-6 times a week. And part of my workout regimen is also cardio, which I usually, it bores me. It's drudgery. So whenever I like to take maybe a third, if I use your product, I take a third of the bottle of the Feel Free, and lo and behold, an hour and a half of cardio. I love it. I could do more. So it's really been beneficial in that respect for me as well. I know you also sponsor a few university sports teams. So I've also heard that athletes enjoy these particular effects of kratom. And so just so we don't lose that thread, because I think this is very important, what you just mentioned a minute ago. So you talked about how these stalls in the rural areas of Southeast Asia, you get this kratom tea. It's really unprocessed. It's basically the plant ground up, maybe boiled with water, however they prepare it. What's been happening here in the U.S. is often vastly different. Similarly to what's been happening also with marijuana or THC.
And yeah, they've ruined marijuana.
Yes. And instead of taking Mother Nature gave us and use it in a as much as possible unprocessed way, now we have all these, gosh, whether it's extracts where you get amounts of actives that no one is intended to take. And we've heard about this in the last year. This is particular to THC, where people consuming this start vomiting, projectile vomiting, or all kinds of crazy stuff, because you're actually taking substances in an amount, in a concentration that was never meant to be taken. That's with THC. And with kratom, of course, I've also seen, especially online, there's products where you get these tinctures where it's just so highly concentrated. And that's where I think it also may become dangerous. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, what I know about your company and your company's products is that you take the plant ingredients basically as intended by nature.
Yeah, we're the only shot that I'm aware of on the market that is full ground leaf. Everything else is an extract. And probably, I'm going to say 95% of the total market of kratom in the U.S. is extracts. So it's exactly like coca leaves and cocaine. When I say it's exactly, it is exactly like it, because they both, coca leaves and kratom leaves, have about 52, 53 alkaloids. They take solvents or CO2, mainly solvents because it's cheaper, which is a whole other thing because it leaves residue. And they extract certain alkaloids out of it, preference to the ones that really the feel good alkaloids. And as you said, then you can get hundreds or thousands of times more of it in your system than Mother Nature intended you to, because you're bypassing all the plant fiber. You're also leaving behind a lot of other alkaloids that we really don't know what all those are actually doing or not doing. We know that the blend together has been used by people for thousands of years with no problem. But we have not done the science to know what all those other alkaloids really are contributing or not contributing. And I just wasn't comfortable in changing that, because I made this for myself, not for other people. And I just didn't feel comfortable. And I actually tried some of the extracts, and I didn't like the way that they made me feel. I also actually saw some liver enzyme issues, saw some elevation in liver enzymes fairly quickly from some of them at higher doses. So I decided to stay away from that and just stick with the bull ground leaf. Unfortunately, because of all of this, you know, if you Google kratom, it'll scare you to death because it's talking about all these issues that people are having. But again, if you go to Central and South America, people will start chewing coca leaves when they're in their teens and chew them until they're 80, you know, mid-80s, never have an issue. And it's a wonderful plant, does wonderful things. Most people that start on cocaine, it doesn't really end very well, including myself. And it's just a huge difference. And I think, again, I think it's anything that's highly processed. We'll go back to alcohol, you go back to cocaine, you go back to these really highly concentrated extracts of kratom. I just don't think that our body is capable of knowing how to process those correctly. That just creates issues.
Absolutely. And I think also for, obviously, you're a U.S. company, so it goes without saying, the plant ingredients, the plant medicines you are using are legal. Specifically with kratom, though, over the last decade or more, there has been a little bit of a back and forth. There's been a push to make it a controlled substance that was actually reverted, I think also due to an outcry of many individuals, including war veterans who were able to, whether it's managing their physical pain, whether it was managing their PTSD, depression, or anxiety. So a lot of people actually spoke out against that. And the initial, I think what this push to make it a controlled substance was also based on were some studies that were actually not really truthful in how they were presented. So one of the biggest myths or rumors about kratom is that it causes liver damage. Now, I think that has been pretty much debunked in the meantime. Can you go into detail about that, please?
Yeah, kratom came into the U.S. in the 70s, and it came back with the Vietnam War veterans. It also came in with some of the Asian populations that migrated here. It really started taking off here in early 2000s, and that caught the attention of Big Pharma, the FDA, and they started signaling in on it. They tried to get Congress, as you talked about, to schedule it. They actually pretty much got that done, but there was just an incredible public groundswell, including some congressmen that said, okay, what's the basis of this? What are you basing scheduling this on? And when those documents got reviewed, lo and behold, some of them were really real. Or there's sections redacted to make them say something that they didn't really say. An example is they pointed to a bunch of deaths. One of them in particular, I remember, they had it logged as a kratom death. They'd redacted the guy got shot 5 times.
Clearly a kratom death.
Really, yeah. And when the congressman dug into it and got the unredacted versions, they found none of them were strictly kratom related. They were all poly, where someone had meth and a lot of other things. Yeah, they had kratom in their system, but they had plenty of other things too that were in their system could have caused it. And then, so that was Congress overturned it. It went away. The FDA then tried to get the WHO to do an international ban, World Health Organization. It was just last year. And fortunately, the governing body is run by science. And they looked at it and said, there's no science to support a ban. There's just not. And they denied that. So it is legal federally. The FDA still is trying to at least slow it down. They have an import alert. So they can, as shipments come in, they can detain them or seize them or whatever. And then they go around every so often seizing product from manufacturers' plants and stuff. But they can't really do much more than that because it's still legal. It's a really interesting thing that they won't stop, even though the science doesn't support their position.
And I think something else that's interesting to mention, you might have these numbers on your radar much more accurately than I do, but I think it's the tonnage of kratom that gets imported per year into the U.S. is an indicator of the, it would literally be millions of people.
Yeah, it's about, there's 4,500 metric tons a month just coming in from Indonesia.
Wow.
That I'm aware of. So you do the number, the math, it's very easy to look what an average consumer is. It's somewhere, it's north of 15 million people that are using it on a regular basis.
Yes. And as mentioned before, you know, this particular with regards to kratom, people use it to alleviate physical pain. People use it to alleviate anxiety, PTSD. I have some friends or former special forces in the armed forces, and they use it to alleviate PTSD and rather do that instead of taking SSRIs with anything. I'm a big fan also of medicinal mushrooms. I love my reishi. I love my cordyceps. I also love Ayurvedic herbs, ashwagandha, that are part of my regular longevity health and wellness protocol. As with anything that you take, or even when you take vitamins, you have to know, first of all, do you trust the company that you purchase this from? Where do they actually source their raw material? So you got to be informed. And let's talk about reishi, for example, also called the mushroom of immortality in traditional Chinese medicine. Reishi is not reishi. There's a vast difference between companies, between suppliers, how it's grown, is it free from toxins and such. And so, of course, also with the plants that you work with, kava and kratom, I would like to know from you, like, how do you source it? You just spoke about you actually. So,
that's a really good point you bring up. What I don't like is when I hear FDA administration officials say, we don't like natural health care. We want everything to come through big pharma and doctors. We don't want you to have the choice to self-medicate. We want you to go through one channel, and we want to be able to tell you what the choices are, what you have. I don't agree with that. But I don't agree with having products on the market that are unregulated, because you can't believe that all the companies out there are going to do the right thing. So we've actually been spending a lot of resources working on getting kratom regulation passed. And we now have it passed in 11 different states. About 20 other states are trying to, and we're trying to get a federal bill introduced that sets quality controls, that sets labeling requirements, dosages, all of that, so that it is something that the consumer can be comfortable with and feel like that it's safe and it's not just a Wild West. So I'm just be very blunt. I do not believe in an unregulated environment for any of this, but I also don't believe that you should be dictated to synthetics.
I agree. I think that the latter for me runs under biological freedom. I have the right to also self-soothe, self-medicate. If I prefer to get an herb out of my... Cheers! If I prefer to get wild mint out of my garden in order to soothe my stomach versus having to take some kind of antacid or whatnot, then that should be okay. If I prefer to soothe my anxiety with something like kava or maybe something like reishi, that's also up to me. This is biological freedom to me. And I also believe in what you say, the former, that we need regulations to make sure that whatever we choose to take is safe, is regulated, is free from toxins, pesticides, or free from being altered in such a way that it can harm us. Now, something that really impressed me, and I want to corroborate that with you, is when I first came across your products, I also learned that you test three times. You test at the place of origin, then you test again if it's imported here in the US, and then you test the finished product.
We test at the farms. We test all of the individual ingredients before they go into the blend. We test them after they've been blended, and then we also test them in the bottle itself. And then we retain the bottles and we test them over a period of time up to a year after they've been bottled. So we have a very detailed testing program all the way through for every single lot that's produced to make sure that there's not an issue, and nothing gets released until after it's been tested. So we go through a waiting period of time for test results to come in before it's released out of the market. And that's some of the things that, you know, that we're trying to put into the regulations that companies have to follow. It's basically just good manufacturing processes.
Absolutely. I agree. Something I'd love to hear from your perspective, and especially since you've been immersed in this for the last many years, in your opinion, what's the most misunderstood thing about kava and kratom, and how do you address these misconceptions?
Kava, I would say that people will Google and they'll see liver damage. A lot of stuff about we don't do kava with alcohol, which, you know, is true. You shouldn't do large amounts of kava with large amounts of alcohol. You shouldn't do large amounts of either one of them anyway. Everything in moderation. The liver damage that they refer to refers back to a situation in Europe, in Germany specific. And it was like cannabis or many other things. There's a lot of different varieties. There's over, just in Vanuatu alone, there's over 200 strains of kava. There's two major groups, noble and non-noble. And the non-noble, the natives can consume that and not have an issue. I guess they've developed genetics to be able to handle that. Outside of them, it can cause an issue. And they used to export some of that. They don't export it anymore after what happened in Europe. There was, and it wasn't like it was a huge thing. There were some issues with some people. But now, I don't know of any non-noble kava that's being exported out into any market. It's all noble kava. And noble kava, I would challenge anybody to bring any single person, any event ever that's ever had a death or a health issue of any magnitude on kava. I don't know of it. I've not been able to find it.
Yeah. And again, for thousands of years, it's been ubiquitous within the Polynesian cultures. And if there was a huge problem, then by now we would have heard about it from there, is my take on it. And again, of course, like with anything, like with alcohol, I can even drink myself to death by drinking too much water.
Right. And then with kratom, I think the thing that always gets me, this is the origin of this, is the FDA. They just continuously say kratom is an opioid. Kratom is not an opioid. Here, you ask any scientist, they're going to tell you it is not an opioid. Does it strike the same receptors that opioids do? Yes, it does. It does it differently. Opioids will attach. This is striking versus attaching. What they don't point out is that there's many other substances that we use every day that strike those same receptors.
Can you name some?
An example would be sugar.
Right. Yep.
Sugar does cheese. There's many things. Just because it's hitting certain receptors doesn't mean that it's going to kill you. The other thing is they'll talk about what's a respiratory suppressant. There is no legitimate scientist that will tell you that kratom has any respiratory suppressant to it. That really with the opioids is the main problem, is opioids do have a respiratory suppressant. And if you overconsume them, you stop breathing. That's in layman's terms, that's how people overdose on opioids, is they stop breathing because of the respiratory suppressant. And You're not going to see that. There's been a lot of research done in the last 5 years or so on kratom, especially out of the University of Florida. And even with much higher doses, yeah, people, they feel it. They get sick. They get sick as far as nausea and what have you, but they don't OD. They don't, it's just not the same thing. And I get tired of hearing that because the FDA keeps saying it. And then all these publications and news stations and stuff, they pick that up and they just parrot that same thing over and over again until it becomes, that's what it is. And it's sad because there's no basis to it.
I've actually, over the years, I always like to immerse myself in whatever I add to my own, what I like to take on a semi or regular basis. So when I immersed myself, for example, into kratom, I actually have read quite a few accounts where individuals talk about that kratom helped them curb an opioid addiction. Is this something you've also come across?
Yeah, it's interesting you bring that up because I've heard several accounts recently of FDA administrations talking about the fact that's one of the main reasons that they don't like kratom is because they don't want people to self-medicate themselves off opioids. They're saying, yes, it is effective at doing that, but we don't want you doing that. We want you going to the doctor and we want the doctor to prescribe Suboxone or something like that for the rest of your life. We want you to take that route. We don't want you to do it by yourself. They've not proven that it's not safe to do that. That's what if you're going to say something, if you're going to have a platform and say, this is the boogeyman, prove it. Show me the proof. Do the science and show me the proof. If it is, I'll be the first one to jump up and say, okay, we don't need to do this. But they won't do that, and they won't do that because they know they can't do that.
Now, JW, talking about science, can you talk us through some of the current scientific research on kava and also kratom and what insights it's proved?
As I said, there's a lot of work that has gone on recently. There's more work going on. We're starting a clinical in Canada on feel-free specific, but everything that I am seeing shows that it's as safe or safer than many other things out there that the FDA has already approved on many different levels. And I would not ever say that anything that actually really works, that makes you feel good, has the potential of being habit forming. So that's just a natural thing. If it makes you feel good, you want more of it. And some people will want more than others. Some people are always going to abuse anything. As you said, you can kill yourself on water if you consume too much of it. But if you look at it and look at even the FDA's own databases where they track adverse events, the numbers are a fraction of what the numbers are of many other foods and drugs that they've approved. So I don't understand why they have such a bee in their bonnet over something that the numbers don't support their position. The only reason that I can think of is that you're trying to pick winners and losers. And that really is not what I think that they're supposed to be doing. They're supposed to be protecting public health.
Yes, I think it's a really complex issue. And I cannot even begin to imagine how difficult it must be as the founder of a company such as Botanic Tonics to move within these parameters and deal with. You've had amazing success. You've really created something that's akin to a movement and also having to deal with the adversity. Speaking about this, there's recently been a class action lawsuit that's been put in motion. And can you talk a little bit about this and also how it's impacted you and also maybe any advice you'd have to other companies going through that? Like, how do you move forward? How do you defend yourself?
So it's not, there's a process to go through to get a certified class action. So it's in the very early phases. So there's an individual that, you know, and this is his admission, not me. He's alcohol, drug addict, in and out of rehabs, supposedly had allegedly stopped drinking, was sober, started using Feel Free, and got up to doing like 10 of them a day, and then tried to get off of them, decided that in order to do that, they need to start drinking again. And he started drinking again and drinking, for what he says, pretty heavily. And then he checked himself into rehab. He's claiming that we caused that. So he's saying that we didn't warn him that it was habit forming, just like anything else that makes you feel good. There's plenty of other things out there that are habit forming that don't have any warning on them. And you want to put warning on sugar. You want to put warning on cheese. You want to put, and that sounds trivial, but if you look at the numbers, sugar kills 168,000 people a year. That's not a trivial number. The data, you can go and look at the Harvard study or whatever, they have done the work to attribute directly to what sugar is doing. Sugar is a very effective drug at treating anxiety and stress. And that's why people overconsume it, because they have stress and anxiety, they're self-medicating. But it's, so he's filed wrongful marketing or wrongful advertising against us for not providing him enough warning. It's fascinating to me that the class actions that are happening today, and an example of one of them is, there's one recently with Red Bull, and they had a campaign, You'll Grow Wings. There was a class action suit against them because people said, you told me that I would grow wings if I drank this, and I didn't. And they actually awarded that class $13 million.
That part I had not heard about. That's pretty ridiculous.
So that tells you the environment that we're in. We're doing more and more all the time, but I don't know where it stops. Where does it stop of people just having the common understanding that anything can be abused? And if you abuse, I don't care what it is, you're probably going to have problems.
Yes, most certainly. And of course, this also goes hand in a sense with the growing popularity of plant-based medicine, which ties right into what we were discussing before, where people want more agency about their health and well-being. A lot of people have been feeling disempowered by, especially within our cultures, have been feeling disempowered by the conventional medicine. And that's not to say anything against conventional medicine.
I'm by no means am I saying that we should do away with conventional medicine. I think there's, and natural medicine's not the full answer either. It's a combination of both. All I'm advocating is I would like the choice. I would like to be able to choose between the two. I would like it to be regulated. I'd like it to be safe, be fair, but I don't want to be forced to just do one thing. Some of those things are killing a lot of people.
And indeed they are. And I'm completely with you there. For me, it's also about choice and about freedom. Something else that really interests me, JW, is, and this is the, I'd like for you, can you discuss the importance of sustainability and environmental responsibility with regards to some of these plant medicines like kava, like kratom, and how you at Botanic Tonics address these issues?
Yeah, example of this is Vanuatu, which is a group of 80 islands between New Zealand and Fiji. It's where we get all of our kava from. It's really where kava, from what I can tell, is where it started thousands and thousands of years ago, and it spread through the islands. But it's the number one export of that country. And it's not these huge commercial farms. There's just, you don't see that. It's tens of thousands of individual farmers on small plots, all organic. They don't allow any pesticides or anything, never have. And that's what they provide for their families with. So I like the idea of supporting that and growing that. We're actually building facilities there, processing facilities, really working on beefing that part of it up, because I see kava as the new sugar, because it's even more effective. It's treating stress and anxiety, and it doesn't have the health downside that sugar has. So I think kava is going to become massive over time once people really, it's in its infancy, because if you go down the road and ask people, probably 8 out of 10 wouldn't know what you're talking about. So it's just starting to scratch the surface. So it's important to me that it's grown in an organic environment, and it's not grown by these huge professional farms, and it is helping hundreds of thousands of people.
That's good to know. And that's, I think that's a beautiful basis for having basically a win-win scenario in different parts of the world. I have had the pleasure of, a while ago, I was invited to your headquarters here in Los Angeles, and I got to try some of the prototypes for some new products that you have, because you started with the original formula. That's the kava-based tonic, 10-to-1 kava and kratom. Can you talk about some of the different formulations of products that Botanic Tonics offers now, and maybe also talk a little bit about the different effects?
Yeah. So the one that you got to try is the one that we just launched. It just went into the market about 30 days ago. It's all, everything we have is kava is the star of the show, the main ingredient. But this one also has ceola, kola nut, and lion's mane. And what that's doing is the combination of those is mimicking kratom. So it's a version for people that, for whatever reason, don't like kratom or can't use kratom. It's a version for those people to use. It's not exactly the same as far as the feeling. I find it a little bit more energizing, and not, it's more something I would use earlier in the day versus later in the day. I use a little bit of both, but it's a wonderful product. And we did blind sensory study. We did just sensory studies and tested very well.
Yes, it did. And I love, now I know what ingredients are in there. When I tried it a few months ago at your headquarters, I didn't, but the effects that I noted and also took note of and then shared with your team make total sense. With lion's mane or rhodiola, it's really, there's a stimulating effect on your brain. There's greater focus. Lion's mane in particular has been known for supporting NGF, nerve growth factor, which of course is really beneficial for your brain. I love all these amazing plants coming together and working synergistically. So this is another product you've come out with. I remember I also tried some other prototypes. Are there any other products in the line that you can...
So that one that you're talking about is also in a 2-ounce shot form, just like the prior one. We're also coming out with a natural soda that is a carbonated beverage that also is a lot better flavor.
When are you coming out with that?
It should be out by year end. It's in the testing phases right now.
Need testers?
Yeah. I'll get you some samples and you can try it. It's a wonderful drink. It's like a lemonade, but it's like a lemonade that makes you feel really good.
Fantastic. Great. And talking about feeling good, is there any particular story, anecdote that comes to mind? What was one of the most rewarding moments in this part of your life, your career as the founder, as the CEO of Botanic Tonics?
You know, I get a lot of calls from people, especially people that are talking about the fact that I can talk openly about social anxiety. I never dream that there's as many people out there as there are like me that have crippling social anxiety, and then that stresses them, and they go around and they're self-medicating and all that. But probably one of the most moving stories that I've heard was a lady called me from Austin, and she said, "I ordered your product online." She goes, "I like it," but she said, "That's not what I'm calling about." And I'm like, "Oh, where's this going?" And she said, I gave it to my husband. She said, "I didn't tell him what it was." He said, "He came in from work and I gave it to him." And she said, very distant, she said, "He went in and he started working as he always does. And he said, next thing I know, he goes, I hear him in there and he's laughing, he's giggling, he's playing with the girls. They have two little girls. And she said, one of the girls comes in and says, what's wrong with daddy? What's the deal? And she said, he wasn't the same man that I married. You know, he got really distant. He's got very focused on everything other than the family, disconnected. And she said, he's been using it on a regular basis. And in her words, she goes, you brought my husband back. Mm-hmm. That he's the man that I fell in love with. She was almost in tears. And then I was almost in tears. To hear her tell this story about how it had brought them back together. And I remember I got off the phone and I was just like, you know, nothing in the world is any better than that. If it's just that one thing, there's nothing else that really matters.
Yeah, that's absolutely wonderful, JW. And that's, those are the things that keep us going. And just full transparency here, with the exception of very few people who know me very closely, nobody would even think of that in regards with me. Anxiety is something I know very well. I also know social anxiety very well. I've always been able to mask it. And in my earlier years, I'm 46 now, but in my early 20s, especially, alcohol was my choice to feel less afraid. I was actually very well known for being very social in certain phases of life.
The life of the party.
Yes, exactly. And people never knew. Now, people really close to me do know. Now I've got a really good handle on it, a lot of self-growth, a lot of healing. However, it's something that I'm quite well acquainted with. And I think it's much more pervasive than we know, because most of us, for most part of our lives, we would choose not to talk about it because there's also shame or insecurity attached to it. And thank goodness we're now living in a time where we can just address these things head on and just talk about them.
Yeah, exactly.
There's one other question I have for you, because I'm sure there are certain members of the audience who'd be really curious to hear from someone such as yourself, who's been very successful in business and now has very successfully built this business out of pure conviction and sharing something that you wanted to create yourself. Can you share some advice for entrepreneurs who are interested in starting their own wellness businesses? And what qualities do you think are essential for success in that field?
As far as just from a business standpoint, it starts off with finding a good product or creating a good product. It needs to be, I think, really in today's environment with so many choices, when you go to Erewhon and you look at the wall of drinks, it really needs to be something that's not just about taste. It needs taste too, but it needs to be something that actually changes somebody's mood. If you look at all the successful beverages, I don't know one that doesn't do that. And I'll go all the way back to Coca-Cola. To me, Coca-Cola is the original functional beverage.
Yes.
It's especially the original formula that contained cocaine, now still contains decoconized cocaine. You think about it, it's got caffeine, it's got sugar, it's got decoconized coca in it. It's still a very functional beverage. People think they drink Coca-Cola because it tastes good. They drink it because it treats stress and anxiety.
I have a question here. I've never even heard about that. How does that work to decoconize cocaine? I'm guessing they work with coca leaves then, right?
So they are connected with a company that has the only license to import coca into the U.S. It's a big company. And they decoconize it. And Coca-Cola actually has their own farms in Hawaii where they grow their own certain strains. So they don't talk about any of this, but decoconized coca is still part of the formula. It is in the formula.
Wow. And so on a biochemical level, what does decoconized cocaine?
That's where it gets interesting, because nobody knows other than them. It's all a proprietary formula. I actually had the experience of going through years and years ago, going through their lab in Atlanta, and it's pretty amazing. Hundreds of white coats working away behind closed doors.
So, yeah, and this just boils my mind because the coca plant, the coca leaves, are some of the most highly regulated plants out there.
So Coca-Cola actually was involved in the process of scheduling cocaine. Originally, if I understand it correctly, it was because they wanted to have a monopoly on it. And in the process of doing that, they were able to get an exception and get this license through this other company. And that company also sells to medical, the cocaine side of it, or the medicinal side of it. It's a huge business, but they have a monopoly.
Wow. Do you remember the name of that company?
I don't. I should. I'll send it to you. I'll pull it up and send it. It's a massive conglomerate.
That's really fascinating, JW. Thank you for sharing that. That interesting fact. Yeah. So it's
I got off on a tangent there. I think it needs to, whether you look at it, whether it was Red Bull or 5-Hour alcohol, Coca-Cola, whatever, I don't think you can name you can't name a beverage that really became huge that didn't really change your mood in 30 minutes or less. It's not just about tasting good. It's also not just about, I'm sorry to say this, about just about health. That needs to be part of it, but that won't do it in today's competitive environment. It's also got to make you feel different. That's the type of stuff that people will continue to consume.
Thank you. That's really interesting, JW. And yeah, human beings love to, and have also, even if we look back to our ancestors and what they consumed, human beings have always loved to be able to change their state. Now, of course, we know we can induce a state change. If I did some jumping jacks here, I can induce a state change, or via breathing. However, we as human beings have always liked substances that we can take that will automatically induce a state change. So that is really interesting. There's one question I like to ask every guest, and that's about a practice. Now, with you, of course, we know one big practice, that's kava, but something that's elevated their experience mentally, physically, or spiritually. Now, medicinal plants are a big part of your private life, also of your business. Is there something in particular in connection with those plants that you'd like to share? Maybe a ritual, or maybe there's something completely different.
Yeah, I think the thing that I've always fallen back on is exercise. Even through the times that I was abusing alcohol and other things, I always managed to work out. That was the thing that kept me from just totally going off the deep end. I've been doing it now since I was 14, so a long time. It's almost more so now. It's a mental thing than a physical. I'm also I have a routine, and I stick with that routine. So I get up very early. I do a sauna. I do a cold plunge. I go work out. All that happens before most people are getting out of bed. But that is what works for me. It sets the stage for the day, and I feel that maybe it's just what works for me.
Outstanding. Thank you for sharing that. And I concur. Exercise is a big part of my life too, and for mental health, for physical health, and just, setting the stage for the day. People would like to learn more about you, more about Botanic Tonics, more about your products. How can they reach out, or how can they find everything?
So our website is botanictonics.com. And there's plenty of additional information on the site, blogs, all of that. And I'm also always available too. So anybody ever wants to reach out to me, contact information is on there.
Super. JW, thank you so much for joining us today on the Superhuman Podcast. It's been a real pleasure talking to you and hearing your story and the project, the trajectory also that you've had. A lot of illuminating information here. I'm very grateful you took time out of your busy schedule to spend some time with us.
Thanks for having me.
Superhumanize. Accelerated evolution.